Welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian. And as always, joining me is our co-host, Jim.
Hidey-ho.
And Jim, you have brought a guest on this week. Please introduce your guest.
I have. This is Mike, and he and I have been friends since, about fifth grade?
Oh, my God.
I'm thinking at least 1982, so yeah, whatever yeah. That was.
Wow, it is yep. A pleasure to meet you, Mike.
Likewise.
Mike and I have the distinction of belonging to the 1988 Sandy Valley Fighting Computer Nerds.
I wasn't 88. I had graduated.
Oh, that's right. It was 87.
85, 86.
Oh, God. I was still in middle school at that point.
Yeah. We were on the computer team.
We would
go to other high schools and battle them gladiatorial style.
Oh, gosh.
With code.
With code.
I still have the certificate that year that we won up at Glen Oak. And it was like, they gave everybody, that was awesome.
Right. Well, welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
We have brought you here to talk about getting old games to run, something all three of us know a bit about, which is awesome. That'll be a fun topic.
Yeah. We know about getting old.
Yeah. We've been threatening to do this topic for a while, and due to circumstances beyond at least my control, I'm just going to, show you how the sausage is made. I am not prepared for this at all. So let's just dive in. also, I'm a little tipsy. I had some tequila before this. Let's talk about some news first. I guess the big news is you can now pre-order X Rebirth on Steam, which is exciting. I'm probably going to do that soon. Even if I get a press copy, I still want to do that because it looks awesome. And I haven't been excited for an X game since Extinction, if that tells you anything.
So wait a minute. So this X game, this is the one that we saw the very brief demo clip of, right? The trailer. They showed it. It looked like they were walking around in the ship.
Yes, that one.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
new one.
So does this one – I kind of took from that like it was going to have some narrative.
Well, they all supposedly have narrative, but they're all interspersed with all this openness. I've not played one long enough to dive into the narrative in a while. But they all have something of a narrative. But this one, I think the thing about this one is, one, it's trying to have a more detailed world, but also be more accessible at the same time.
Okay.
I think they realize what kind of walls that people hit when they try and play their games over at EgoSoft, and they're trying to make this one even more accessible. So hopefully they will, because – I don't even know if my 3-year-old rig can run it based on the video and the screenshots I've been seeing.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, it looks crazy beautiful. Now, whether it'll be good, don't know yet, but it looks nice.
Hopefully it's cool and not impenetrable.
I'm really, because X Albion Prelude, once I finally kind of penetrated it, it was kind of fun, but there's still some issues I have with the X games that really get in the way of my enjoyment. Like, the concept of distance and transit are just ridiculous in that game. I shouldn't have to use a time extender thingamajig to get places in a reasonable time. Nor should the ship be so disconnected from the player that it can basically fly itself.
Yeah,
That bugs me. Those two things bug me about the X games. So I'm hoping they address that in some way.
Yeah, I think essentially what you want out of this game is to be able to fly that one ship that you fly around in distant worlds, but fly it in first person.
Yeah, and
you'd be happy.
Yeah, I don't mind if we get one ship as long as it's compelling. Like they did that with what was it, Dark Star 1. And there it wasn't very compelling.
Because you had a magical ship.
Yeah.
That game was not.
Yeah, that wasn't very compelling at all, sadly. No. So, I mean, I like the idea
Truckers in space.
I like the idea of being connected to one ship, like being compelled and being emotionally connected to your ship. I like that idea. Like, Independence War did that really well. Like, I love the Dreadnought from that game. It's still one of my favorites. So I don't mind if it's done well, but when it's not done well, it's like, no, I want to buy other ships. Give me a freelancer thing where I can just fly somewhere and buy another ship to try out. So yeah, we'll see. It looks like, based on what I saw, it looks like you can have one ship, but you can fly around little, little drones and stuff. So that's cool. That's nifty. What else is going on? Did you guys hear about 0x10C?
Yeah, it got canned.
But
the fans said, well, we'll pick it up.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not surprised.
Is he
going
to turn the code over to them then?
I'm not entirely sure. I've been so busy with life and stuff that I haven't really delved into the news stories that I've been saving. But a lot of people are saying that he's going to let the fans work on it. So I'm guessing he's going to turn the code over to them. I always got the impression this was kind of like a side project. So,
well, he was piddling with it, but he said multiple times that he put it down and picked it back up because he couldn't figure out how to make it fun.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I was never too excited about that game because it looked more like Minecraft in space, essentially.
Yeah.
And I don't like Minecraft. I don't. I'll be honest. I don't want to build shit. I just want to run around and blow shit up. Yes, thank you. Thank you. So yes, I'm not a fan. I don't like in Minecraft I had to build my own house. Fuck that. I don't want to do that. So let's see what else is going on. Artemis 2.0 is out. You guys know what Artemis is, right?
No.
The bridge simulator?
Yeah, it's kind of neat. You basically have a LAN party with, like, what, is it four or five PCs?
It can be iPads now, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it can be PCs and iPads.
So, one guy's the weapons officer, another guy's the science guy, and, you know, so you coordinate together, and what they'll do is one of the machines, it's best if you project it up on, like, a wall. With a projector or something, or a big screen TV, and then you treat that like the front screen on the Enterprise, and just basically play your station.
Yeah, and apparently it's a ton of fun. I've been trying to get a group together to play it here in LA, but it's been tough. But there's a new version out that adds 3D, so there's three axes now instead of two. There's a full-fledged player versus player mode. There's NPC ships that can give you missions.
So...
I really want to get a group of people together to play this because it sounds great. You know, I've played a little, there's another kind of thing. There's another kind of game similar to it called Quintet, but the benefit of that is you can just play that in a browser. So you don't need multiple PCs, and also you can play on the iPad. So I've had a friend or two over with the iPad to play that. The concept is great. I just wish I could play it, you know? Oh my god. Apparently the new version can support 8 simultaneous ships, which means up to 48 players. Oh my god.
That's pretty wild.
I wonder how we can make that happen.
Well, I'm wondering, can it work? Is it only a LAN party thing, or can you do it over the net?
I'm not sure. You get people
on Skype or TeamSpeak or whatever, and you'd be fine.
I'm not sure. Info. I'm looking at the actual website right now.
Co-op.
FAQ. How good does my computer have to be? Why can't my crew play over the internet? I see. So apparently you cannot play over the internet.
Sucks.
Wait. No, I'm reading this wrong.
Well, the new one you better be able to.
There is a server option that lets you adjust the network speed or something, so it can be played across the internet just fine. So apparently it can be.
Oh, neat.
So maybe we should try that at some point.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, that came out. And I guess the final bit of big news I'll relate to is the guys that made Endless Space, you know, my favorite game. Endless Space, the game I love so much. They've announced a 4X fantasy game.
What?
Called Endless Legend.
Oh, man.
And you know what bugs me about this?
Everything. Everything about this.
Pretty much, because, like, Endless Space doesn't feel finished. It doesn't
feel fixed. Right, and they're moving on.
And yeah, they're moving on to a fan. Now, I love fantasy games. I love strategy games in general. I love fantasy games. But from these guys, I really hate to be negative on anyone. I try to be as positive as I can toward any developer and any project, because I'm a big space game nut. I'm a fantasy game nut too. But these guys just half-assed. I'm just going to say it. They half-assed Endless Space so badly. I think.
I think it's all down to AI problems. I don't have any problem whatsoever with the game design.
Well, the UI is also kind of a mess. A little bit. It's pretty.
I get by with it. I've seen it so much worse that doesn't affront me.
I suppose. People give me crap because they say the Distant Worlds UI is worse. I don't think so, but I'm biased again. But
you just have to find a particular type of pain that you enjoy, and that's what you gravitate to.
It's so. You know what a particular type of pain I enjoy is? Liking 4X space games right now in this day and age.
Yeah, they're pretty tough.
Because fuck, man, why can't they fuck Sword of the Stars 2, Star Drive, this? I mean, come on.
Sword of the Stars 2 isn't bad. It's
no,
just
it's not
very
bad.
Different.
It started bad.
Yeah, oh, it started bad.
And I think it soured a lot of people toward 4X space games in general.
Yeah, possibly. But, you know, they didn't really screw up the first one, so we can still play the first one.
No, thank God.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad that they changed so much in the second one, because the first one, they had pretty much tapped it out. You know,
that's
it's
fair.
Like they added a bunch of races.
Yeah, they had like three expansions for it, I think.
Yeah, and at that point, it's like, okay, change the game system. That's fine. Experiment. So, unfortunately, it took a little more experimentation than their development cycle allowed. So they ran into overtime. But I think they're okay now. So be that what you know for what it's worth. So
right.
I can't believe you've made it this far into the podcast and not mentioned Ben Affleck.
It's a space game podcast, not a Batman podcast. Kevin Smith has one of those. Kevin Smith has one of those, and it's actually excellent.
It is.
Fat Man on Batman. I'm like only halfway through them, but they're great. But little side note. Ben Affleck? What?
At least it's not a Batman, one of the Batman trilogies. It's what is it? Batman, Superman versus Batman,
This is starting a whole thing, though.
League.
Yeah. Apparently, that's the plan.
They didn't learn anything with George Clooney. You don't want somebody that's too smooth being Batman.
See, I like Ben Affleck. I do. But Batman?
Well, I think there should be a rule. He was Daredevil. You're not allowed to be two superheroes.
Yeah.
Well, it worked for Chris Evans, though.
What was he?
Oh, he was the fire guy in
Fantastic Four.
Then he was Captain America.
Oh, okay.
In the movie in the Avengers.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't even make that connection.
I didn't either. Yeah, he was so young in the.
I know, but I think I'm right.
Fantastic
about that,
Four.
Yeah, no, same guy. And so it can be done, but Chris Evans, I think, did a really good job. I think in both roles, he was the best thing about the Fantastic Four movies.
I just wanted to hear you do the Darth Vader whenever.
You know what? Ben Affleck isn't a bad actor, so I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, and I read some comments earlier that said, you know, everybody went crazy when they heard Heath Ledger was going to be the Joker, and look what he did.
Well, again, everyone went crazy when Michael Keaton was announced as Batman back in the
80s.
Yeah, yeah. He's the best.
Yeah.
Love Christian Bale, but Keaton is the best. Well, live action. Best live action. Let's not get into the amazingness of Kevin Conroy.
No.
It's a whole other ball of wax.
Yep.
But those are like the big news thingies. So, Mike, you're new to the podcast. So what have you been – let's talk about, like, real quick, what are we playing, guys? Any space games being played right now?
I had been playing Space Pirates and Zombies, which I think Jim had gifted to me through Steam.
Nice.
Did you say Space Pirates?
Space Pirates.
Oh, that holds a special place in my heart.
Spaz.
Space Pirates has kind of become a catch-all term for random bullshit on this show.
Yeah, it was like the first night that we didn't have a guest or a topic. It was like, what are we going to talk about? I don't know. What about pirates in games?
All right.
And it just turned into a
random shit. Space Pirates and Zombies. I'll be honest, I never got far enough to encounter the zombies because I have severe ADD. But what a great game, right?
Yeah. Well, I got as far as the zombies, and then I got to, and I'm finding, you know, I like to play a lot of indie games, but I'm finding they're very weak in their middle game. I was playing Knights of Pen and Paper Plus One before that, which is a really fun game, but you get through all the quests, and then it's like, okay, and the final boss is 25 levels higher than you are, so there's a lot of grinding, and that's the way I feel with Spaz, and that I got to a point where I can beat everyone at my level and lower, but to get to the next part of the quest, you know, and
you got
to
grind against the zombies.
Gotta grind because I'm just getting my ass whooped.
So is that maybe a symptom of where the game goes from having a lot of structure to where they say, okay, now you're in a sandbox until you graduate to the next whatever?
Kinda. And some of the stuff I've read online, people have finished it and have said that, you know, yeah, the end game is really good. I mean, you know, a lot of tactics, strategy. I mean, a lot of good stuff. But it's just kind of like, we don't know how to get you from, say, level 50 to level 70 or whatever without, like, just keep doing more of the same. I guess scaling of difficulty is a little bit of an issue. But
that's a shame.
But otherwise, it is a lot of addictive fun.
Yeah, that's a
kind of reminds me a little bit of one of the games I might be talking about later, Stars, with an exclamation.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Either of you played Stars? I love that game. Oh, but, yeah, very similar thing that, you know, there's bad guys coming in, build ships, send the ships out to tackle them.
Stars a real-time game?
No, or Stars is a turn-based 4X that looked like Windows 1.
It was 4X, but without all the nice graphics that you had of, say, Master of Orion and some of those.
Very basic.
It was very, very basic graphics, but very deep gameplay.
Oh, great.
One of the first that had kind of a built-in mac ring system. One of the things I liked about it was you could tell a ship, go here, mine ore, go there, mine ore, then come back. You could set up automatic things where it's like, keep cranking out this ship until you get to 1,000 of them or whatever.
You know, it's a real shame. I have in my hand right now a copy of the CD-ROM for the sequel.
No doubt.
Yeah, I can't get it to run. I can't get it to run at all. It's from 2000. I got it at E3 from Empire Interactive when they still existed. And I remember playing it back then and being amazed, just amazed by it.
So you're saying the game used to run, but now you can't get it to run on current gen hardware.
Yeah, which is such a crime. Because
hopefully we can solve that for you tonight.
Oh, maybe. I've tried so many different compatibility bull crap with that thing, and it just refuses to do a damn thing. Which is a shame. I gotta say, let's just jump into this. Games from the late 90s and the early aughts, like 98, Windows 98 and XP, are probably the hardest games to get to run, I think.
Yeah, a lot of the compatibility issues and hardware and, you know, well, and I think there was a lot of that was probably the big video card wars. I mean, you know, it wasn't just ATI and NVIDIA.
No, it was 3DFX.
I mean, Hercules was still doing it. Yeah, and, you know.
Yeah,
everybody had a video card. A Diamond, I've still got a couple little Diamond cards.
Oh, Diamond.
But yeah, and then of course, you know, every game came out specifically for one card. And if you didn't have that card, then you got, you know, the garbage. But
that's why they used to pack games in with a card, right? Because you know, you'd get the latest card, and it's like, wow, now I need a game that demands it.
I remember, I don't know about you guys, but I remember my first 3D card. It was a Rendition. Remember Rendition?
Yeah,
that was my first 3D card. It came with a Sierra game. It came with like a racing game. I think it came with like a one of the A-10 games. Remember those?
Yeah.
That was the day, man. And then I hooked up two 3DFX cards to that thing, so I could run just about anything for a couple of years.
You could play the heck out of MechWarrior.
Or Interstate 76.
Oh, yeah. Same engine. A little bit of trivia.
Exact engine. Huh. And you can kind of get that to run now, but you need this weird, like wrapper thing that turns off Explorer. Did you guys know that? Yeah, you get it on good old games. You get Interstate 76 on good old games, and then you have to get this
dog. Yep.
Yeah, you have to get this this separate program that turns off Explorer, runs it in like glide mode, and then once you're done playing, it turns Explorer back on. Supposedly.
It's crazy.
Really weird. Huh.
So, this is a great time for me to talk about the topic that I brought tonight.
Which is
the N-Glide wrapper.
You have to imagine
Captain Picard standing there and saying, N-Glide.
Is that the actual one? It's N-Glide?
Yes.
Okay.
It's from Zeus Software, ZEUS-software.com.
Okay.
And they make this this N-Glide wrapper, and they actually link like straight over to Good Old Games. So Good Old Games, I don't know if they're using them or they just like really are in the same boat, right?
That.
So yeah, but they do link direct to Good Old Games. Like, hey, go get these old games.
Oh yeah, I've seen
them.
These guys before. I recognize the Carmageddon shot at the top. Yeah.
Yeah, and they have down at the bottom of that page. There's a compatibility list, which is quite massive. And then there's a gallery as well that shows a bunch of the games that run. And that's kind of a trip down memory lane there. But basically what this thing does is it takes all the old 3DFX Voodoo API calls and it translates them in real time over to DirectX instead.
Yeah.
So you get – and also what's really nice, the last thing that I played with this was the old NovaLogic game, Tachyon the Fringe.
That game
was never meant to go above like 800 by 600, maybe 1024. I was playing that thing at 1900 by 1920 by 1600 or something.
Yeah,
whatever my monitor will take, right? So it was filling at native resolution, like a 27-inch monitor.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the box now. That's the one. Yeah, Bruce Campbell did the voice acting.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
yes, he did. But that you don't need a glide wrapper to run that one because that's on Steam. It'll just run right out of the box.
Well, yeah. I bet that they're actually emulating it somehow that way.
It could be.
Wouldn't be surprised.
But since I was able to get my copy of it running, I really didn't mess around with the Steam one. But I'm kind of curious. Right. So if anybody wants to drop that in the comments of, you know, is it running a glide wrapper or what did they do? Or does it just run? See, that would be like the worst. Is if you buy it off Steam for $10 or whatever, and then it runs at some funky resolution that your monitor probably can't even drop to anymore.
Mm.
So, yeah. But anyway, N-Glide, that's the way to go.
It runs Hard War. Oh, I gotta try that one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I gotta try that. Because Hard War in software mode is kind of assy. I mean, it was never the best looking game. But in software mode, it's more ass-tastic than it is in hardware.
Well, you know, I'm looking down this list of games.
Yeah.
You know, just looking at screenshots of all these old games, and it's like, damn, I've played just about every one of these.
I know, I've played so many of these. Oh, it runs Independence War Deluxe Edition. That's excellent. That's a beautiful game.
That's a tough game to get running without this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, Longbow 2. Ooh, not a space game, but oh, wonderful. Oh, it runs a lot of classics.
Yep.
M1 Tank Platoon 2, which is not an easy game to get running.
Yeah.
On modern hardware.
And of course, Longbow 2, the best helicopter sim that ever was.
Yeah. Still is.
And Interstate 76. I see a picture of it right here.
Yeah.
The gold edition.
Yeah.
So yeah. See that'll be. I actually own that from Good Old Games, and
I
don't think that they used N-Glide. I think it was just software mode, so I'm going to have to try pairing this up with that.
Not to one-up you, Jim, but I still have my discs.
Okay. Yeah, well, I've still got it, but it's just like, do I want to dig that out? So it was like Good Old Games did all the legwork for me of getting it to work. So I was just like, I'll give you $5. I don't care.
I totally double dipped on that. Absolutely. Yeah. I will not double dip on Interstate 82, though. I got burned once.
I avoided that one. That was when I was just like, let's wait and see reviews. And that's back when it was painful because you had to wait for a magazine to land in your mailbox.
Oh, a magazine. Hey, this thing runs Subculture, the Sanglide rapper. I got to get that running.
Oh, cool.
That's a great game. Wow, there's a lot of good stuff in here. What, Redguard? Really? Wow. Okay, this is pretty awesome. So, yeah, I've been actually having more luck getting really old games to run. Like when I did the review of, Space One from 1978, I used an Apple II emulator, which I'll have to find and put in the show notes, and it worked great. It worked great. And, of course, DOSBox. I mean,
DOSBox, the Defend Reloaded GUI front end.
Oh, I've actually been using one called DOSBox Game Launcher.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's JavaScript or Java based, and it helped me get TIE Fighter running beautifully. Because I mean, fucking TIE Fighter. TIE Fighter is not the easiest game to get running, and this thing runs. Why aren't you running? What's wrong with you?
There was something that changed about DOSBox in the last few years because I used to have an incredibly difficult time of getting TIE Fighter to run. And lately, the last couple times I've set it up from scratch, it's just worked on the first try.
Yeah, no, I remember. So. Yeah, same exact thing. I remember like 3 years ago, I tried to get TIE Fighter to run, and it was just choppy as shit. It was like, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And but no longer. Now it runs great. I mean, you've seen the videos I do for it. It runs fantastically. DOSBox is probably one of the best things that could happen to gaming.
Yeah.
In a long time.
For old gamers like us.
Yeah. Well, without DOSBox, the abandonware sites would pretty much be out of business. Yeah. And a lot of good old games, they're highly dependent on DOSBox too. So.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great enabler for everybody. So I would assume that Good Old Games is a very frequent donor to the DOSBox project.
I would hope so, because I mean DOSBox, it gives us so much to play with. I mean, not only can it run all these games, but it's so configurable.
Yes. Well, without
or it can take a lot of the configuration out of your hands, so that you don't have to completely, have to relearn how to edit config.sys and autoexec.bat to get your drivers.
I don't even remember those anymore.
Oh my god.
Oh.
Yeah, Mike. Remember, I want to play
floppy disks.
I want to play Falcon 3, but I can't load my mouse driver.
Yeah.
Because if I load the mouse driver, then I don't have enough XMS to fit. So then you get into the custom bootloaders.
Figuring out the right combination and sequence to load your drivers so that you had enough XMS and EMS memory.
I bought Ultima 7 Serpentile, and I never could get the damn thing to run because I could never find that magical boot disk combo to make it happen, and not for the lack of hours of trying.
Yeah.
And so it's like I finally got that thing from, I think it was Good Old Games, and it was like, yay, that's it. Oh, well, wow, this is really old.
Yeah.
But I felt a little twinge of victory there, It's like, yeah, finally. So anyway.
Have you guys played, because apparently, like I'm told, once I get to the Commodore 64 – and Amiga games, there are these two emulators called, I think it's Amiga Forever and C64 Forever.
C64 Forever, yeah, I've been tinkering with that.
Oh, how do you like it?
It's pretty good. It comes, the biggest reason I got it, and that's Nagware, unless you can pay it like $30, I think, for it.
Right.
To get rid of the nagging. But it comes with a bunch of games preloaded, and I actually spent, probably 30, 40 hours playing Wasteland, the original Wasteland from 1988, in preparation for Wasteland 2, which is coming out here in a couple of months through Kickstarter.
Did you kick to that?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
See, the thing about the emulators is they emulate maybe too much.
Too much, yes.
Because it's like flip the floppy.
Flip the disk, and then it's like chunk, 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 chunk.
What?
Chunk, you know, and it's, and you're like, really? I've got Commodore 128, and I've got the original Wasteland on floppy disk. If I wanted to sit and wait 2 minutes for it to load, I would just go boot it up off the real thing. But yeah, it is a little bit too realistic. But yeah, you have to – I mean, it's all click, you know, mouse clicks, but you actually load disk one, load disk two.
I'm very surprised that they emulated the 1541 drive as excellently, and I mean shittily, as they did.
What is the – I never had a Commodore, so please explain.
Yeah, it was well as an old 5 1/4 inch disk drive, and it was dog slow.
Oh, really?
It was double-sided, which was awesome because that was the advantage you had over PC owners. I've got a double-sided disk drive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I pretty much jumped right from a TRS-80 to DOS, you know, so I never had a Commodore or an Amiga. So this is all going to be new to me.
See, it started out, I had a TI-99.
TI-99-4A.
Yeah, and then Mike's neighbor, Doug, across the street, had also a TI-99-4A, but he had the floppy disk thing, which was like a mobile home that sat on his desk. It was huge. It was like a military grade chunk of hardware, like a warehouse to keep a single floppy disk in. It was huge. It was meant to be like some kind of crazy expansion bay thing, but it was as big as your desktop. Oh, and God. For one floppy drive that was down at the very far end of it. I could never figure out what they actually intended with that thing. And it was hideously expensive to get one of those things. What were they, like $800 or some crazy shit?
It was crazy, yeah. I think he got his used off of some business guy he knew or something.
Yeah. But it was like – I remember writing games and I would save games on floppy – or not floppy, on cassette tapes, right?
Yeah, cassette tapes.
And then take them over there and it's like, hey, check this Kung Fu game out I made. It takes 15 minutes to load, 16K.
And I was going to mention it. That was the one game that I decided Jim is going to be one of my best friends forever because that the TI-99-4A had 16K of memory. And Jim used all 16K of it to make this karate game. I'm still convinced that it preceded all the arcade fighting games before it.
Well, it had the elements, right? You were doing jump kicks and backflips, and you could shoot fireballs, right? And yeah, and it was in 16K. So what you'd do, you'd take the regular ASCII characters, and you could – there was a system call command. It was call char. And then you would put in hex code, and this is how I learned hex code, was you'd have to write in hex code what the bit pattern was for this 8x8 sprite.
Your own sprite. Yep.
Yeah, and you'd make those, and then everything was done with ASCII characters. So it might be like a letter A, but it was turned into a little stick figure.
What?
And I spent a lot of time on that. I was so pissed off one night, this guy that my mom was seeing, he came over and he had a bunch of records, you know, his record collection, and he taped Golden Earring over top of this program that I made. Oh, God. And that's before I understood backups, right? Because it's like, hey, this is the golden tape. It's got, you know, this thing on it. Yeah. So those are the good old – I mean, shitty old days. But Mike was, like, privileged, man. I had this TI-99-4A, you know, that barely got by. And he didn't even have a Commodore 64. He had a Commodore 128, which was like the Ferrari.
Oh, shit. Yep. Oh, wow, yeah.
Did that thing have the drive built into it, or you had like?
No, I had an external drive for it.
Did you see the Commodore Rebirth project that was going on?
I did, and I wanted to buy one, but I thought the what they were asking for was a little bit too much.
Yeah, and it was basically a PC that lives in a keyboard.
Yeah,
it was the form factor.
Yeah,
but it just wasn't.
I want a revamped Commodore 64. But
yeah. Huh. Back when computers used to have dedicated chips
on
the motherboard.
Is that the one now where like the Commodore is the whole unit? It looks like a Commodore 64, but it's the whole thing, which is like a whole PC?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's like, yeah, small form factor PC, but it looks like a Commodore 64 or the...
Yeah, so you basically boot up a desktop PC and then load a Commodore emulator.
Yeah.
Was their idea or something. So
did it not take off?
No, I think it kind of died in the
There's a lot of appeal from nostalgia. A lot of people were crazy about it. But, yeah, then when they finally came out with them, which was, I think, 6 months to a year longer than people expected. But then it was like, whoa, $800, $900? Yeah, I could buy a laptop.
Buy something really nice.
You could buy a decent, really nice laptop,
buy a decent desktop for that much.
Yeah.
Thank God. Yep.
But, so. Yeah, but I remember coming over to your house and seeing like F-15 Strike Eagle for the first time.
F-15 Strike Eagle, I played that for hours.
Oh, funny.
Greatest thing I liked about that game was, well, actually, it was F-15 Strike Eagle 2. You could shoot somebody behind you. The missiles would actually go and come around and shoot guys behind you. Made the game real easy. But
nice.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. So have you been playing anything, Brian? You had a heck of a week. You had like work overload, and then you had cooties. And how'd your cooties turn out?
We're still cleaning the apartment.
Yeah.
They're still putting everything back.
So what was the deal? Because that's why the podcast got delayed. It was like the apartment called, and they were like, hey, we're bombing the building.
Oh, well, first they put a notice on our door saying, hey, we're going to – probably come in and spray. It's not bombing. They come in and spray.
Oh, okay.
Your apartment. We're going to come in between like next week and October, but we'll give you 48 hours notice. We're like, it's such a pain in the ass. We're like, fine. So Tuesday morning, I open the door. There's a note on the door. We're going to come tomorrow. Oh, fuck you. Fuck you very much.
So what do you have to do? You have to like pull everything away from the walls?
We have to take everything out of the kitchen cabinets.
Oh.
Everything out of the bathroom cabinets.
Gnarly.
And then cover them with sheets. And then I had to board the cats for a day.
Mm.
And we're still putting stuff back. It's a day later and thankfully the girlfriend is doing a lot of the work. I really appreciate it. But yeah, we're still putting stuff back. So, I'll be honest, most of the game playing I've been getting is on the Vita.
Yeah.
like this past weekend, I might have played a little bit of Ring Runner for review. I played some TIE Fighter and I played some Distant Worlds, and I'm loving Distant Worlds so much. But
yeah, I heard on the Vita, dropped the price to $199.
They did.
I guess Walmart has the best deal right now because it's like a package deal.
They had until they sold out of it, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, they had a deal for the same price. You get, an 8-gig memory card, which is all right. You get a game. You get a year of PlayStation Plus, which is great.
Nice.
And like a stand or something. But that's a pretty good deal for the PlayStation. That's like $50 by itself.
Yeah.
You get tons of free. I've gotten so many free games from my PlayStation Plus membership already. It's and I've only had it for like a month or two.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, yeah, a lot. I've been playing. It's not a space game, but to get my fix in, I've been playing Burnout on the Vita.
Oh, cool.
So which Burnout? Is it Burnout Paradise or
no? It's Burnout.
Original?
It's Burnout Legends, which takes elements of the first three games, some of the tracks, some of the modes. And melds it into like this cornucopia of awesome crashing modes.
Cool, because really the crash stuff was the only part of the game that I ever saw.
Oh, I love
that's.
Oh,
racing stuff. I did love the crashy races, but one thing I miss is from one of the versions on PS2 had a traffic check, which you could hit traffic cars. Hit cars.
It was Burnout 2, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was 3. I have 3 on my PS2, but it was like you can hit normal cars and knock them back into your competitors.
Yeah.
And sadly –
get revenge kills.
Yeah, and sadly this thing on the on the Vita that I have does not have that. So I'm like, I'm going to hit that car and – oh, crap. I crashed. Yep. It doesn't work. So that's what I've been getting my game in.
So I have the bad news.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So in sort of – well, it's sci-fi gaming, right? So close enough. Space Hulk, right? I bought Space Hulk. I bought it day one.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It's it has hope because it's – you know, it's software. Software can always be fixed, right? But the problem is that – well, Rock, Paper, Shotgun did a review of the game, and they nailed it so spot on that for me to review the game would basically the most efficient way would be to just open their website and read it to you. So I would say just go to Rock Paper Shotgun and give that a read. But the gist of it is that the animation speed of the Terminators is so stinking slow, and you're playing against a clock, right? So if there was a slider about how fast you want your guys to walk, or you could like hit a key to just complete a move or whatever, okay, fine. Other thing is the UI. See, I've been playing a lot of XCOM, and the UI in XCOM is damn near perfect. So it's I'm very spoiled by that. So then in this game, it's like I click a guy, and then I want to click a place. Oh, well, wait, no, I don't want him to go there. Well, he's already walking, and you can't stop him, so you have to undo the move, and then you click him, and then, you know, it's like, oh, crap, I tried to walk through there, but the door's closed, right? And it just doesn't work for me. So that's kind of bad, and it's really frustrating when you're actually on the clock, right? And you have to be undoing moves and doing all this stuff. When if I could just drag a line out and see the path that the guy's going to go and then how many action points he's got, and then when I release the mouse, he goes, that would be great. But you don't get that. So hopefully they'll patch that in. Those are my two giant complaints. The third complaint is AI, because when you play this game against another human being and you're sitting across the table from somebody, and there's a lot of shit talking that goes on when you play Space Hulk, and that's what makes it fun, right? Right. But it's basically like an Alamo kind of thing. It's like you got your four guys or five guys, and you're standing there, and then the other player gets waves of stuff that come, and he knows how many bad guys are under each blip, and it's going to be from one to three, right? And here it's like, the computer plays, but the computer doesn't seem to really take into account how many guys it's going to get out of a blip. So it's almost like it just doesn't know. If you play hot seat against another player, then both players can see how many enemies are under a blip, and it just totally blows that whole thing because you never know when you see blips on the radar in the board game. There's tension, and I think that's what's completely missing from this thing. Is I'll get myself in a good spot. I'm on Overwatch staring down a hallway, and which works about the same way as XCOM, right? So every time an enemy takes a step, I get a shot at him.
Right.
Otherwise, if I shoot first, it costs me an action point every time I squeeze the trigger. So you want to spend the 2 AP and just go on Overwatch and wait for them to charge at you, which they will do. So that's the last problem with the game mechanic is when the Gene Stealers charge at you, they do it in a long cha-cha line down the longest corridor possible to give you too many shots, right? And there will be alternate – like I stood in a hallway. There was two other ways to get to me where instead of coming the whole way down the hallway in my line of sight, they could have sent guys down the sides, and I can't turn and shoot both directions at once. So somebody would have got a shot at my back, and that's how you play the game. And the AI is not that smart. The AI always takes the direct route to you. It doesn't flank. And because of that, every mission's like a cakewalk. So, and it's so frickin' slow. It takes like an hour to play a mission that on the tabletop would have took 15 minutes.
And then I heard the Bureau wasn't that great either.
That's the other game I've been playing. How did you know?
I don't know.
So, yeah, I'm kind of, what is that, about $80 out this week.
So,
the Bureau is – I will not write that game off though, okay, because I am compelled to keep going back and playing it.
Right.
Have you – you've played in L.A. Noir, right?
No.
No? Okay.
I have, yeah.
Okay, so it looks as good as L.A. Noir. So it's a really good-looking game, and I really like the time period because it's set in like the 50s, 60s era there. So the Sky Rangers are like helicopters with jets strapped on the side, and you're running around with like M14 rifles and stuff at the beginning. I haven't got to the point where I have actual good guns to shoot aliens with yet. But the first mission is that you're an agent and you've got a briefcase and you're supposed to deliver it to this general. And the girl that's in the room turns out to be like a sleeper agent. You know, she's possessed or something by aliens, so her eyes turn all red. And then there's this flash, and you wake up, and she's dead. The case is gone. And, you know, and it starts out with this kind of strong narrative. And you're making your way through the base as aliens are flooding in. And it's kind of interesting. So I know, Brian, you haven't played the Mass Effect games because you're a terrible and empty person. but what about
Sacrilege.
Yeah, what about like Brothers in Arms, Road to Hill 30, or Born in Blood, or whatever?
I own them, but I have not played them.
Okay. The combat in this works kind of it's a cross between Mass Effect and like a Brothers in Arms game. So you will tell – oh, and it retains things from XCOM, right? So there are chest-high walls, as in all good cover-based shooters. You have to have walls that are chest-high. And those are in great supply, and there's also cars and stuff to hang out behind, but cars will – you know, they're prone to explode if they get shot, so that's risky cover. But the cars are really nice, like 1957 Chevys, though. See, so
they're,
you know,
heavy.
It's all
real pure steel cars,
yeah, exactly. but it's the visual period of that, which is, so it basically looks like you're running around in a Leave It to Beaver episode shooting aliens, is kind of how it is. But
Holy
it's
beef?
Exactly. You're a little hard on the sectoids there, weren't you, Wally? So. But anyways, it's kind of interesting. They made some very odd design choices, and that's what people are getting really peeved about. Like case in point, in the Mass Effect games, what you would do is you would pick a squad mate and you would say, you move there, and then you can queue commands up in this game too. So you'd say, you hide behind that wall, and it will show when you point to that area. It'll show a shield icon on the wall, and it'll show a half shield if it's, you know, he'll be in partial cover. You know, it's exactly like XCOM Enemy Unknown in that way. So you get the guy over there, and then you say, okay, shoot that target, or if you're an engineer, throw a turret over here, right? Or the scout guy can bring in, like, air support. Which even works indoors, oddly, but it's just like magic powers that your guys have, right? That instead of being like psychic powers like they had in Mass Effect, it's actually gadgets and stuff. So if you're going to deploy a turret, you'll get a you get like a turret deployment icon, and the game sort of pauses. It's not a complete pause. It goes into like a tenth of normal speed, so the aliens are still moving and still shooting. But it gives you a very slow motion, so
kind
you have some
time.
Yeah, the kind of bullet time, but even slower than that, right? So you can kind of think about what's going on, but it doesn't keep you from, you know, it's not a pause button. So you have to still have a little bit of urgency about giving orders, which is okay. But if I'm going to drop a turret or throw like a special, it gives me an icon on the ground, and then I have to put that icon, which has sphere of, you know, like a radius of effect around it. I have to get that over into the middle of the enemies that I want to affect. The problem is that I cannot just draw a straight line over there and drop it. I have to move it as if it were a character. So it has to go around obstacles and up a staircase and around the corner, you know, just as if I was driving a dude.
What?
And it's the oddest choice. The only reason that I can think about them doing it that way is they were kind of lazy about – they wanted to make sure that I couldn't deploy things a place that a guy couldn't get to. So they make me actually calculate the path for them.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Didn't the Dragon Age games have something similar for their long-range attacks where you had to drive the thing around?
Yeah, kind of like
that.
But
it was kind of a limited thing. It's like if you didn't get it there in time, you ran out of time to do your move or –
Yeah, well, you played it on the console, though, right? So it might have been different there. Yeah.
Jeez.
I heard that the console and the PC experience in Dragon Age were vastly different.
Oh, yeah.
So, anywho, so that's it. It's a passable game. Some people said that the narrative really kind of sags in the middle, and then it ends weirdly. So I haven't got that far yet. I'm still in, like, the third mission. So I'm just still – I'm assembling my team and whatever. There was like one place in the base where they had the other problem that I've got with it is the enemies are freaking bullet sponges, like terribly. I put probably two clips into this one guy, and he would not go down. And I think the reason why, he's actually scripted. So I had all my guys shooting the guy that kept spawning little dudes. And it's like, well, kill the big guy. It'll stop the little dudes. And I don't think that the big guy's vulnerable until I've killed X number of little dudes. But they don't spell that out. So that's kind of a gamey thing that they're doing there that wouldn't happen in a strategy game. So if it keeps doing stuff like that, I'm going to get kind of upset with it. But for the moment, the jury's out. But Space Hulk is damn near dead to me because the AI is just rock stupid and it takes me four times longer to play a mission than it should. So if they fix the movement speed stuff, I can tolerate the brain dead AI.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that game might shine in one-to-one multiplayer with somebody else that can't see your screen. It might be okay. Because if you can see my screen, I can't have any kind of secrets, you know? So it's not good in hot seat, that's for sure. What really sucks about it, the Space Hulk board game is like $100 and some to buy one because they're out of print again.
Oh, really?
Why the hell don't they keep making that thing? It's like that game just prints money. So I don't know. Have either of you ever actually played the board game?
No.
Or seen it?
I've only played the 90s version.
Okay, but
it's
still about the same. It just kind of includes some things and some stuff's been streamlined. But yeah, it's a good beer and pretzels game because you can get a game over with in 15 minutes.
Right.
Well, I think most games I played with you, Jim, always ended that way. 4 hours of preparation and 4 minutes later, you're dead or we're dead. Well, that was fun.
Well, did you ever play Car Wars with me, or was it all
yes,
like BattleTech?
I think I was specifically thinking of either we died in the first few minutes or an hour later. It's like, we can't kill them, they can't kill us. This isn't it fun. Car Wars usually was like that. That and BattleTech, you know. I just love filling out that form and putting armor on my hard points and do I want a PPC or a Gauss rifle? Pew, pew, you're dead. Well, that was what else are we gonna do?
you lose the whole afternoon to set up on some of those things, but at least we weren't playing stuff like Third Reich, you know, where you legitimately spend like a day setting up the hex map.
Oh god.
So that was one of those tabletop war games, Gary Grigsby style.
Oh.
That was like it came with basically a suitcase full of little paper chits. To put on the map is crazy.
Sticks to figure out. Do you have line of sight? And
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Bonkers. Well, Brian flew out here. We went to the Matrix Games press conference thing, and I was hoping to make it to the actual miniatures convention, but I only had one day to do it, and they went to that on the second day, so I kind of missed it. But next year, hopefully,
if they
I'll
do
get
it
to
again.
Check that out. Yeah. Well, that's a yearly Historicon is. But I don't know what Matrix is going to be doing, but Historicon will be there.
They said they might do it in Europe next year.
Oh, interesting. Well, half those guys did come over from Europe, so it would be shorter for those dudes, right? So, but anywho, that's, I think, been about it for me. Oh, yeah, and playing a lot of, speaking of BattleTech, MechWarrior Online, they added the 12 versus 12 mode into it.
Yeah.
So that's been pretty interesting. That really radically changed the game. You can't play sloppy anymore.
I have to jump in. I missed a bit of news. It's like the only news I've posted in the last week. The EVE Online folks are going to be making a dogfighting game.
Yeah, I saw that. I think, Jim, you sent me the video. Right?
Yeah, with the Oculus Rift. And
yes. I'm not sure how I feel about that, to be honest with you.
Honestly, have either of you played, Dust 214 or
oh,
whatever?
Oh, God, no. Why would I do that to myself? Why would
ground-based game?
No. No. I want to enjoy life.
Well, I've heard it's not as bad as some things, like sawing off your own toes.
I love the idea of it. Honestly, I love the idea, but... No. I'm not a fan of first-person shooters on the console to begin with. I mean, I've played a couple, and it's like, eh. But no. The EVE universe is fantastic, but I don't want to be limited to one planet in that universe. I don't know. I like where they're going with it. I don't know how this new game is going to link up to it. If at all, but I can't imagine it will. I can't imagine because there's all kinds of time dilation and stuff going on, I believe, when you're playing normal Eve Online.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing at this point it'll be a single-player experience, which that'd be awesome. I'd be happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Someone on a forum on it. Sorry.
I think it'll be multiplayer, but it just might not be in the same place as the other ships. Yeah. Yeah. It's I think it might be like Dust, where it's an entity that exists unto itself and it doesn't interfere with the other game. Although it would be very interesting if you finally could actually fly a ship around and interact with the big capital ships. But you'd be like, on the scale of those ships in that game, you would be like a gnat.
Yeah, even
they wouldn't even feel
even
you.
Even if you were flying around a frigate, you'd be like this tiny little thing. And so, what'd be the point? I mean, maybe in this game they'll represent those cap ships and they'll have some cool cap ship battles around you. I don't know, but I don't know. It looks cool. Someone in a forum was like, "So it's the next TIE fighter," and I was like, "Fuck you."
No,
don't
you really
dare!
Feel?
Don't you fucking dare! I'm very protective of the TIE Fighter legacy, and someone has to be. God damn it! If Lawrence Holland won't be, I don't know where he is. Then someone has to be protective of the TIE Fighter. Damn it! Even if the later game is a giant win button with the TIE Defender, I still love the TIE Defender.
Yep.
But it is a giant win. It is a giant win button. It really is a big win button. So did you got TIE Fighter to work, right, Jim? Didn't we have to fiddle with that? What did we have to do with that?
Have to mess with it too much.
It was something with the joystick or something.
There was other games that I had a bunch of joystick trouble with, and it was in DOSBox. And it's actually, by default, DOSBox will have a four-axis joystick set to automatic detection. And what you have to do is set it to a two-axis joystick and then turn off the auto stuff. And then there was like some other tweak that was in there that once I did that just kind of fell into place.
Yeah,
I forget it specifically what it was.
There was one other tweak I'm trying to look for here. I think I had to set my machine to SVGA S3 in DOSBox game launcher.
Yeah, the game specifically that I had problems with was Strike Commander.
Oh, it was open. It was OpenGL. I had to set the output to OpenGL. That's what it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had trouble with Strike Commander.
Oh, what was the problem with Strike Commander?
Where the joystick would drift to the upper left of the screen,
man.
And I couldn't move it. But that was the deal. It was like as soon as I switched it to two axis, I couldn't use my throttle anymore. But
yeah,
you know, I had a working stick then. And then in Subwar 2050.
Oh.
I had trouble with that. Did you ever play Subwar, Mike?
I don't think I did.
Oh, yeah, it's such a good game.
Yeah.
It came out at the tail end of MicroProse's existence,
yeah.
And it was very interesting. It was basically Wing Commander underwater,
yeah,
in a submarine.
It's
but with all the it had all the detail about being underwater with thermal layers and detection.
Yeah,
I just found this out
a little while back. I just found this out, but it's the same folks that made Independence War. Particles.
Oh. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I didn't know that. I was like, oh, my God. So that's definitely a cool one to have on Good Old Games. I was tickled pink when I saw them add that one.
Yeah.
And speaking of Good Old Games, let's just throw a shout out to them because they're like the awesomest.
They are awesome.
The awesomest thing ever. They really are. I mean, they have brought so much great gaming back to people who didn't play the games back in the day. You know, like Starflight and Star Control and Master of Orion, the Wing Commander games, you know, such good stuff over there. You know, yeah.
So Mike wrote up this article that I'm looking through here about getting the old games
running. Did you, Mike?
Yeah. So just been on a kick myself lately on mostly from what I call the Kickstarter effect. It's like, you know, all these old developers are coming out of the woodwork saying, you know, I always wanted to create a sequel to this. So then I go, well, I should go back and play the old game. or you know, some of these games that I'll get involved in, you know, it's kind of like if I were to start to play Heroes of Might and Magic. Well, there's only like 30 of those things. You'd have to go back and play the first few to figure out where they come from. So, but yeah, Good Old Games has definitely long been on my list of great places. But it's I think most of those games really were designed. You know, they ran in older versions of Windows, but the old DOS games, like I was saying earlier. Although I started off with the Commodore 64 version and jumped to the PC version because it has macros.
Of what?
Of Wasteland, oh. And was playing that in DOSBox. But it's like, well, where do you get those old games? And yeah, one of the sites was, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. I call it Abandonia, but it's probably Abandonia.
Yeah, something like that. That's a fabulous.
But great Abandonia.
That's
site.
Probably. That has probably become the, I think, best Abandonware site on the web. I mean, for a while it was Home of the Underdogs, but who knows what's happened.
Yeah, I don't know whatever happened to them.
Well, they're back now.
Oh, they are?
Are they?
Yeah, they faded out for quite some time, and then they came back. So
really?
Yeah. Last that I looked, unless they're gone again.
I mean, they never actually disappeared. They just haven't, like, updated or done anything.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't join the 21st century kind of
thing. Yeah, but the thing is, those games were not being made anymore, right? So if they didn't update their catalog, we weren't missing.
Yeah, like
the ease of use of the site and other.
Oh, that,
that's
yeah.
The only thing I don't like. Abandonia, it's got, you know, you can get the games. There's a lot of ads on there, and that's I was frustrated when I first went to them because I couldn't find the button to download this stuff because everything looks like it's, you know, hey, here's an antivirus thing. Hey, here's utility, that utility.
Oh, yeah.
Where's the button to download what I want? But yeah, the site, they some games they have manuals for, but usually it's just the manual. And so I end up finding a website called replacementdocs.com.
Yeah.
Yep, that's a good
they
one.
They have everything.
Yeah, they do.
And then there's another one, Digital Press. And mostly Digital Press has stuff for your old 90s era console.
Oh, does it?
Arcade, you know, home arcade game consoles, the Sega, the Genesis, or whatever. But yeah, Replacement Docs is great. Because for a while I was playing, it was one of the first Origin spaceflight games called Space Rogue.
Yes.
And there's like 15 different manuals and documents and flyers and maps and charts and a little.
Doesn't
short
that one story. Ask you about like look this up on this page in the
a
manual
lot of games
too?
Did, a lot
there.
Of games did that back then.
Yeah, a lot of those. Yeah, the copy protection was.
Yeah, what's the third word of the fourth sentence on page 15? Yeah. that was pretty common back then.
Which and it's you know you get to thinking about that. It's like that seems like a pretty lame form of copy protection, but back then, I mean. You didn't have access to a copy machine.
Right.
I think you could go to like a library and it's like 25 cents a page or whatever, which would be the equivalent of like $2 a page today. You know, there was no flatbed scanners. You know, so most people ended up, if you could find a manual online, it was somebody had typed it into a text document. You know, but now you've got, yeah, GOG, Good Old Games, and some of these others, you know, people scan stuff into a nice color PDF.
Right. You know it's
so yeah, and that's
I'm looking at.
Well, another tip too is with Steam. If you own the old game and it's on Steam, but you don't want to buy it through Steam, but
oh,
you
yeah,
like the manual, good. You can it's still right click on it and see the manual.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
So I'm looking at Home of the Underdogs right now. They haven't had a serious update since 2006.
Yeah.
And you know what's really sad? If you go to like a games page, to download the game, you click a search button, which takes you to a Google search.
Oh, God.
And the Google search will take you to either like Abandonia or old.
Yeah, so they're part
old
of a web
-games.com, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, now the other one that's really good is oldgames.sk, which
oh,
I go to.
Oh, yeah,
quite
that is
often.
A good one.
Yeah, and you'll get there, and it'll be in, like, Swedish or something, and then there's a little tiny English button in the upper right corner.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of stuff, and it's all DOSBox wrapped. They'll give you an executable that's an installer that will install DOSBox, a custom profile, and the game. So it's a one-click install, and you're done.
Another site that I found was pretty good was DOS Game Zone, and what I liked about it, I mean, it may not have as many games as Abandonia, or some of the others, But you could search by, you know, I mean, not just the game title, but by year. What, show me all the games from 1980. Or what I found was really cool was by the publisher. Mm. So I went in and was like, well, show me everything that Origin Systems has done. And that's how I found Space Rogue.
Oh, right.
I started looking for I started out, a lot of my RPG games were through Strategic Simulations International or whatever, SSI.
Oh, of course.
And found, you know, most of their catalog of old games. Mm. But it doesn't – I don't think that site yet had some reviews, but it was kind of like Amazon where you'd have multiple people's reviews, which was kind of good, but no manuals.
Right.
So
yeah, Matt.
So yeah, you have to do some digging around the internet to find these games, but they are out there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then of course go out and find the manuals, and that's half the fun itself is finding the stuff.
Right. No, I was pretty happy that one of my favorite manuals for any space game is Rules of Engagement 2. And someone actually posted finally a digital version of that amazing manual for that amazing game. So I was very happy to see that. But, yeah, these are all great sites. You know what? I'll be honest. I try and buy the games when I can. Because I like having the actual manuals. You know, I'll be honest. I like sitting on the John and reading manuals, reading computer game manuals. Because that's how I grew up, you know?
You know, the other thing, too, about the old games – in the art of packaging a game.
Yeah, the boxes and all the stuff that came with it.
Yeah, well, the feelies is what they called them with the Infocom
stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Feelies, yep. You always got some little token or whatever. Well, and to some degree, you get that now when you like pre-order a game for the Xbox or PlayStation. I've actually got NVGs for one of the Call of Duty games I bought. But still, it's like, yeah, well, you have to pay 100 and some odd bucks for those. But back in the day, it was like, yeah, for 30, 40 bucks, you'd get a cloth map and you'd get a little gold coin and a miniature and a lunchbox. And I couldn't get it because I was too young at the time. But I remember Leather Goddess of Phobos by Infocom had Scratch and Sniff on the box. I thought that was a cool, you know, or the games would come with and obviously some of that was the copy protection, was the little 3D glasses.
Oh, yeah.
Code wheels, all that stuff. But yeah, I'm like with you, Brian. I like the old manuals. That's what I was looking the other day. Civilization 2. Huge manual for that. Nothing was online.
That was my first Civilization game. I didn't play the first
one. But big, huge manual today to get that. Yeah, you have to buy, you know, spend another $20 to buy the Prima Guide or Brady Games Guide. So it's like, well, great, I've got $80 into this game already, and I don't even know if it's any good. But yeah, the old games, I mean, great manners. I mean, even the flight simulators. I mean, some of them like for Jet, and some of the others.
Oh,
I mean, you could fly a real airplane if you sat
play
there
Jet
and read the whole
by Sublogic.
Thing.
You play Jet?
I think I recently threw the actual game out.
But
I actually had it. Yeah, in
oh
the
my
box,
god!
Had the cellophane.
You're
on
probably
it,
one of like three other people I know who even know what the hell that is.
Yeah, that was a very tough game. But yeah, the manual was like, man, I could jump into an F-16 and fly it.
Oh god, I know.
Yeah. I was big into flight sims there for a while.
I'll never forget that manual that came with Falcon 4.
I still have.
Yeah,
that.
I do too. Yeah,
yes,
the binder.
You don't throw
the
that
nice
one away.
Big
that's a
600 plus page binder. Yeah.
Yeah, you could defend yourself from like a home intruder with that thing.
Yeah.
You totally could. Yeah, but
it's about as big as like a New York phone book. It's
There are some great space.
And they don't do that anymore.
No, there are some. That's why I like owning physical copies of a lot of these space games, because like the manuals, like the manuals for like the Starfleet Command games, and again the Rules of Engagement games, and even older games like Starflight 1 and 2, where they came with the maps, big poster maps, and. Oh, and the code wheel. Remember the code wheel from Starflight 1?
Code wheel, yeah.
And my favorite was in Starflight 2. I don't know if you guys remember this, but like the copy protection was, you had the map, and then you had a little thing you put over the map, and you had to like count how many of the.
Oh my god!
You had to count how many like red stars there were in that quadrant that you.
Yes. I forgot all about that. I think I still have Starflight 2 for my Commodore in the box. I have to check that out. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, there was no way to get around that one.
So they had a thing that shipped with M1 Tank Platoon, the first one, and it was a red piece of paper, and it had black writing on it. And then they gave you a red cellophane, like, decoder ring thing.
Yeah.
And you'd have to hold that over this so that you could read the numbers on the whatever. And it was just like, wow, are you kidding? So what I figured out, I tested with a cotton ball. If you put a little bit of alcohol on a cotton ball and then just rub it on the thing, the red would fade, and then you get a white piece of paper. So it was like, yeah, I don't need that decoder crap anymore because that was such a pain in the ass. But the worst thing was code wheels. Oh, yes. Man, code wheels were the
Yeah, I'm looking to start Forgotten Realms Pool of Radiance, and it has a code
wheel. No.
And I managed to download a color PDF of it, but I'm probably going to have to print it out.
Oh, gosh.
It's rough.
Oh, man, those are the days. And I don't remember, like, I haven't played the GOG version of Starflight 1 much. I think I ran it once just to go, the old days.
Yeah.
Do they have, like, did they break the copy protection? Or do they have a?
I think they did.
I should know that, but I'm a little tipsy.
Yeah, you get when it comes up, it still asks this question, but you can just input anything.
Oh, really?
And it'll
I think I'm the same way. I think I bought Starflight 1 and 2 for nostalgia reasons through GOG, and it's still in my library.
Yeah. It's so
along with some of the other System Shock and some of the other games.
Now, have you guys played Conquest Frontier Wars?
I want to say I did.
That's on GOG as well, and that runs wonderfully. Even the disc version runs wonderfully.
Is that the game that came out from Digital Anvil?
Yeah. Ubisoft published it back in 2001. It was originally going to tie in with Starlancer and Freelancer, but I believe, but they had to move away from that when.
Oh yeah, hey, since we're talking about that, so Freelancer is easy to get running.
Is it?
Like I can pop.
Oh yeah.
I can just pop my CD in and it.
I'll be honest. The other day I tried to get it to run and it wouldn't run unless I added a mod, and then it ran.
Oh, I think. Yeah, I want to say I do recall something about that the last time I tried to get it.
Yeah, like one of my favorite mods for Freelancer is the Rebalance mod. It's a great mod, but so I tried to get it to run. I installed the patch and everything. Didn't run at all. It wouldn't even go to the menu. It would do the intro and then just crash out to Windows. So once I installed the mod, runs like a champ. Really weird.
So back whenever we were schooling up and we were going to talk to Chris Roberts, right? So that in that week that led up to that, I wanted to play everything that he'd done.
Right.
Right? So I did the Wing Commander games up through Prophecy.
Sure.
And then it was like, well, there's Starlancer, right? And I've got the discs, but how the heck do I get this thing to run? Mm-hmm. And so what it took was I had to go to patches.dlh.net, which is one of the really great game patch place. And then
is it Patches Scrolls? Is that's it?
Yeah, that's it. But it's patches.dlh.net.
Oh, that works too? I usually just go to Patches. Okay, whatever.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I had to do, and hold on to your socks, I'm going to name a shady site, is GameCopyWorld.com.
Oh, I know. I know. Game Copy World quite well.
Because the thing that – well, see, the whole scheme of distributing media on a physical disc, right, that's pretty much out the window now. Yeah. Steam finally destroyed that, thank God.
Yeah.
So that's great. But back when that was the way it was done, we needed Game Copy World to give us the patches.
CD cracks.
Yeah, so you could crack the CD check off of your stuff. And that was cool, and they generally keep up with the patches too, and they link to the patches, which is nice. So if I install something off of a CD that I've got this giant binder that's all my old CDs, and I'll pull something out of there, and like the first place that I'm going is Game Copy World to get the CD crack, so I don't have to keep that CD in my drive all the time, because I'm so used to having everything just digitally, you know, available. So anyway, I just don't play that old school DRM. That doesn't happen at my house. So, but that was required to get Starlancer to run because something about the DRM that they used on that will not play with Windows 7. And I had to actually crack it whether even if the physical CD was in the drive, it didn't care. So it was basically like the latest patch and the CD crack and that Nglide wrapper. Those three came together, and I was playing that thing at like 1900 by 1200. It was great.
Nice.
Yep. And it's not a great game, but it's not a bad game. So if you see it somewhere for a dollar, or if I don't know that it even turns up on the abandonware sites, I haven't seen
it. I don't think so. I've actually got the box copy of it, and it says Microsoft, so it's not going to show up on an abandonware site.
Yeah, they're pretty stern about that.
Existence.
I'm really hoping that the success of the Age of Empires 2 HD version, which apparently sold pretty well. Enough that apparently Rise of Nations is being rumored to be released, which I'd be very happy with. But I'm hoping that if these sell well, we'll start seeing more Microsoft games be released digitally, like Freelancer. Because, I mean...
They've got to come out with a sequel to Freelancer.
It's probably not going
to
happen.
Just port it to the Xbox.
It's not going
to
happen. I mean, I think Star Citizen is the closest we're going to get.
Yeah, there's so many of these games that are from the past, and I keep wishing that they would just tweak it and throw it out on the Xbox 360 in the arcade or whatever. Like System Shock, come on.
System Shock, yep.
You know, System Shock 2, right? It's mint. It's ready to go. And there was, like, when BioShock came out, the first one, I was like, this is a no-brainer. People love this game. It got, like, 10 of 10 everywhere. Stick System Shock out in XBLA. And that'll just print money.
Yeah, it's like they're totally leaving money on the table by not having these games available digitally.
And Freelancer is a Microsoft Game Studios game, and it's like it should be a no-brainer to really put that on Xbox Live Arcade.
And Steam. It has to be on Steam. Awesome. It can't just be on the Xbox. It'd have to be on Steam.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, I mean, it's frustrating because when I tell people how great Freelancer is, because it really is great, the sad thing is I have to direct them to a used Amazon copy to get the game, which is sad because I'd love to be able to go, here's Steam, go buy it now. Here are the mods you want. Just have fun. We can't do that. It's such a damn shame because there are a lot of mods for that game, and that game is it's still eminently playable. I was playing it the other day. It's still so much fun. It's still one of the best mouse control schemes for any space game, I think.
Well, it was the first, and I was so freaked out by that.
Oh, yeah, I was really worried. Yeah.
Well, I went to E3 that year. I think you were there, too. And I just remember standing there with Chris Roberts and playing that thing, and I was just like, I don't know. You know, but it hadn't evolved to the state where it was released. In the release version, the mouse control worked really well. Mm-hmm. In the preview build that they were showing at E3 that year, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, I don't know. The mouse cursor didn't go as far, so it was like, have you tried flying Privateer with the mouse?
Why? No. What? Why would I do that? No.
Yeah.
It can be done.
It can be done. I mean, I could stick myself with a fork. Why would I do that? I mean, you know, that's just as stupid. You know, I could pull my eyelids out. I could do that. Why would I do that? I mean, you know, it'd be the same level of pain, I think.
All right.
Is to try to play Privateer with him. Oh, God. No. That's a bad idea.
No, tell us how you really feel.
No, go ahead.
Other piece of news that came out, and I just happened to be staring at it on my monitor, so I have to mention it. XCOM expansion coming out November 15th.
Whoopity-doo. I mean, what is the big deal with this?
Did you see what it is,
no.
though? Okay.
Enemy Within or something?
Yeah, and the deal is that they have come up with two different paths by which you can now enhance your soldiers. Like, in the first game, you had soldiers that had psychic abilities, and then you could train that. And it was random who had them.
Okay.
Right? Not everybody. So in this one, there are some guys that are drift compatible or whatever with the mech suit. So you can go down like a cybernetics path, and the cybernetics path culminates in basically a mech suit that your guy gets welded into, and then you have I'm not kidding. It does rocket punches. Yeah, totally.
Elbow rocket.
And, yeah, so you can like run up and grab one of those big mutons and rocket punch him in the face. So that's kind of neat. The other path that you can go is like cyber implants.
Oh, wow.
So your guys are still that, but you give them like superpowers.
Really?
And it's almost like genetic augmentation that turns them into mutants or something using alien technology. Yeah, it's like, you know, you make like Illyrium juice and shoot them up with it, and then they grow superpowers. So there's a tech tree for that now. So there's two whole new tech trees in the game. And there's like 40 new maps, and there's a new resource that says they've got needle grenades. There's 8 multiplayer maps. Apparently the soldiers that are in there now speak their native languages. So there's quite a bit of stuff that's going to be in that. God, this is going to be like a 10 gig expansion or something. The size of downloads just blows my mind. Since we're talking about old games, right? Like, remember what the original XCOM fit on 3 floppies?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and now it's like a 16 gig download or some crazy
what
shit.
What was...
Oh, that's crazy about downloading some of those DOS games. Was like, what, it's done?
No, what was the first Wing Commander game? Was that like 5 or 6 floppies, if I recall?
Oh, no, it was like...
Oh, it was more
yeah,
than
I think
that.
It was more than that.
It was
like 9? Yeah, it was a lot.
Oh, yeah, because it was the big 5 1/4 floppies, not the 3 1/2s.
Oh, I remember one of them. It must have been the second one that came on so many 3 1/4s. 3 1/4 floppies.
Yeah, I got it on CD because I was late to that.
Oh
party.
No, I double dipped. I had the original and the special missions, all on floppy.
Secret missions for Wing Commander. Yeah, that's I'm actually looking. Yeah, 3 5 1/4s, and then the secret missions are all like a floppy disk
something
each.
Like that.
Nope, 3 1/2 inch disk.
Yeah. For the
I find it very difficult to go back and play Wing Commander 2. It's like part of me wants to love it so much. But then the other part of me is just
TIE Fighter. You have both the Tyrium and Wings of Saint Nazaire to scratch that particular itch.
Exactly. Hey, Mike, did you see that Wings of Saint Nazaire or whatever?
Yeah, that
was
the one I was thinking earlier. We were talking about, you know, surely you can't play a game in space with a mouse. That's the one that, yeah, it's like, whoa, hey, it
plays well with the mouse. Yeah. It didn't like my joystick.
Yeah, I thought with the mouse, and maybe the mouse I was using at the time was a little sensitive, but I had problems where I was like, you know, pitching up and down so far, I couldn't get shots on target. But no, it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
What they've done with it so far, as far as a web browser based game.
Oh, that's right. You can play it. I downloaded the thing, but yeah, you can play it in a browser.
Yeah,
oh.
I think I downloaded it as well, so I didn't have to play it online. But yeah.
No, that's cool.
Definitely shows some promise.
Yeah, totally. God bless Unity, that engine that all these people can use. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm fading, guys, so we should probably call this a night. We've been talking a while. But, Mike, it has been a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise.
We should totally have you on again. This has been a lot of fun.
I didn't realize we were practically neighbors.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Next time I'm down in the area, I'll have to ring you up.
Well, in a shocking turn of events, he's actually going to be – because Mike and I work for the same company, but he works on the West Coast and I work on the East Coast.
Right.
But he's going to be here for the next 2 weeks, so I have him captive.
I thought he was there now, or are you still in
– No, not yet.
Next week.
Okay. Well, hey, how about this? We're going to have some guests on next week, hopefully, but it's going to be kind of early in the morning. Since you're going to be there, Mike, do you want to come back?
Now, the morning one is going to be trouble because he's actually teaching a class.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah,
okay,
so.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
He's not as flexible as the rest of us. Yeah, we might have this gentleman on, one of the guests who's in Central Europe. And so to have him on in a reasonable time, I'm going to get on at 6 in the morning. My time. Because that's how much I love this. so much. Anyway, everyone, that was our random ass Brian kind of tipsy, drunky sort of show thing. But thank you for listening. Oh, by the way, Jim, I'm sorry. How are you? We missed last week's podcast. You were in a motorcycle accident. A minor motorcycle accident because you're still here.
Yeah, well, it was definitely the motorcycle accident that Gotham needed, not the motorcycle accident that Gotham deserved.
Gotham one deserves.
Yeah. So yeah, it was basically, you know, whenever you like hit a baseball and it's flying right at the picture window and time kind of dilates, mm-hmm. and you get that, sure. you get that like shot of adrenaline that you just feel come up your spine.
Yeah,
you know, and that cold chill. Yeah. So I was in the middle of a turn and I realized I was going too fast, and I got that sensation, right? That time dilation and the cold chill and just kind of like deer in headlights froze. And I chopped the throttle. And when you do that in a turn, the bike quits turning and just stands up. So I had a decision to make of, am I going to ride it into the grass, which is my greatest fear, was to go wide in the turn and hit the gravel and then flop on my side on the pavement, right, and skid along. I didn't want to do that. So I'm thinking, well, I can try to wrestle it back down before I get to the gravel, or I can just ride it like calmly into the grass in a planned way. And I thought, okay, I'll just go with the grass, right? But there was a tire rut in the grass, and the front wheel, when it hit the tire rut, like somebody had driven a car through the grass because it was right near an intersection. Most unfortunate. Wouldn't have anticipated that. And the wheel snapped sideways. And when that happens, you get what's called a high side, where you fly over the handlebars. And that's pretty much what went on. So I ended up about 20 yards away, and my arm – I had full gear on, you know, like an armored jacket and a helmet and boots and
gloves. That's cool.
But I've got a hole in my wrist that's still healing, and the rest of the road rash on my arm's okay. But, yeah, it was basically like what I got through the jacket. So if I didn't have that on, even though I landed pretty lightly in the grass, it would have been really brutal. So always wear your gear.
Yeah. Well, I'm never going to ride a motorcycle, so.
Yeah. I'm still trying to justify to myself that owning one is a good idea. it's a thing that time will tell whether I get over my hesitations or not. because when I get that thing up to 55, I start worrying about like what's on the surface of the road. Like, oh God, there's a rock. I'm going to die. You know, so. Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. You know, as I get more acclimatized to doing it, it may not feel so crazy. So, but that's what the whole exercise is about making that mental leap,
right,
of a fear that I've had since I was a kid. Because my mom used to run ambulance, and she'd come home and tell me horror stories.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, yeah. So I'm just trying to work through that. So we'll see. I don't know. But my wife bought a scooter, and it'll only do like 35 or 40. And I really wanted to get another scooter, but I'm like, you know what? If I get sick of that, I could go riding with her, and that's cool at that speed. I'll be most comfortable.
Right. You know?
So, and then if I get comfortable and say, hey, I want to go beyond that, then that's fine. But at least for right now, I can accompany her, and that way she's not out there alone either. So right. I think that'll be okay.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
But anyway, yeah, I feel fine. I don't hurt like I did the day after. Oh, my God. The day after, I could hardly get out of bed.
Oh, gosh.
Because it was just like you hurt in places you didn't know you had. Because, well, you just rolled 20 yards at 50 mile an hour through the grass, right? So it's just like, yeah, I had bruises and things that I didn't know I even owned. So, but I'm good now.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm glad to hear that because, yeah, I missed making a podcast last week, but yeah, you definitely needed to recuperate. But I'm glad.
Yeah, I wasn't hurt too bad to talk, but my mood wasn't the best.
Yeah. We don't want bitchy Jim on the show. We don't want upset. We don't want angry Jim. We want happy Jim. So I'm glad you're doing better. Has the bruising gone down and all that?
Yeah, the bruises are pretty much gone.
Good.
It's this thing on my wrist that's healing up, but it was like damn near to the bone. What happened, though, the glove spun on my hand, and there's Velcro there, right? And you know how rough Velcro is. And you know, on the hook side. And, yeah, the hook side basically was like a cheese grater to my wrist. So my gear bit me in one case. So, but I'm wiser now, so I actually tighten that up all the way and make sure there's no exposed hooks anymore. So, yeah. It was a learning experience. That was the most lesson that I could learn the cheapest. So,
yeah, because your bike wasn't too terribly damaged, right?
Yeah, it didn't cost me a dime. I got a hammer out and beat the shit out of it for about 45 minutes, and everything went flat that was supposed to be flat. So,
well, that's good. Yeah.
The price of motorcycle parts is incredible. Like a little bracket that holds the speedometer in place, $40.
What?
Yeah, and mine was bent up kind of like a pretzel, right? And that's I put it on the floor in the garage and just pounded it until it looked like it was supposed to. So you can tell that I've kind of applied some correction to it. But it's like, you know what? It's functional. Like if I was going to sell the bike and try to get it for full price, you know, and just be like, no, no, I've never crashed that. I'd have to replace that thing. But, you know.
Well, I'm glad your bike and you, mostly you, are okay, because the bike can't come on the podcast. But anyway, folks, thank you for listening to our random musings. Mike, again, thank you for joining us. It was great meeting you, and it was a lot of fun. We'll have to have you on again now that I know you're in my time zone.
What we'll have to do is have Brian come play Mech Warrior with us. See, it's it's 2-1.
I don't know. Anyway, folks, thank you for listening. Guys, thank you for joining us. Have a great night, everyone. Bye bye.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler. Sure thing.
Down, but I see only one. Trying to think I'm over you. I find I'm just begun. The years move faster than the days. There's no warmth in the light. And how I miss those desert skies.